Schooner. It's past 4 p.m. Do we have any housekeeping, anything coming up we need to tell people about? I don't feel like it. I mean, beginning of the year, probably in your job too, but in our job, it's just a weird time. Not as much advertising, not as much activity, not as many events. Just everyone just kind of like sleepily
waking back up
for the new year. Matt Pauly joins us from the sports department. Hey, Matt, how's your Wednesday?
It's pretty good. You know, we recorded tomorrow's countdown to opening day show over at Cardinal Nation earlier today. Did that with Ricky Horton, which was a lot of fun.
Nice.
So people can hear. We did about 45 minutes together, just him and I, and got into a lot of different things. So people can hear that tomorrow. And then as I was driving, Dave, I heard your conversation with the chaplain from the airport. And
yeah.
I just thought that I was enthralled listening to him speak today. So you did a really nice job with that interview.
Thank you. He was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. In all candor, I didn't hear him, but I heard about him on NPR one day when I was driving around. I thought, I had no idea that this existed. And the Reverend told me he didn't either until they recruited him. So what a wonderful thing that they're doing. And yeah, we're going to get behind it and try to raise a little money for him, because there's nothing like being in trouble, whether it's physical or emotional or spiritual, at an airport. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah, so when I was coming back from the winter meetings, I had a situation where for some reason, one of the airplane kiosks would not take my credit card. Now, I changed kiosks and everything was fine. But in that moment, like, my life is flashing before my eyes, because it's like, how am I going to get my luggage home? What do I do? And that is the smallest example of feeling on, like, when you are at an airport, it doesn't take much to go wrong to just screw up every aspect of your life.
Absolutely. It's like a little microcosm of life. It's like a different universe or something when you're in an airport. Let's talk some baseball. As I understand it, there is a trade today involving the Cubs, and Wheels was just sort of edifying me with why this should be important to Cardinals fans, if for no other reason to give us a little bit of rationality about what we might get back for some of our guys like Donovan. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so the trade is Edward Cabrera from the Marlins to the Cubs. They're getting in return Owen Casey, who is one of the Cubs' top prospects. For MLB.com, they have him as a top 50 prospect. He's number 47. And then a couple of other guys that are they're maybe upside plays, but they're not as highly ranked. They're not as highly thought of in the system. And what I was saying to Dave off the air, Matt, was, you know, that's 3 years of cost control on a 27-year-old starter who throws 100 miles an hour, has a 94-mile-an-hour changeup, but who's also had injury problems and has been, you know, kind of up and down in part because of those things, versus 2 years of Brendan Donovan, who, by the way, you know, has also missed a bunch of time. You know, in two of the last 3 years, he's missed significant chunks of time. So I'm not sure that that's going to be a big different point of differentiation for another team. But I guess it kind of guides us where I think an expectation would be, I would expect less than that for Donovan than for Cabrera. But it also depends on the team, their desperation level, their needs, etc.
Yeah, I would definitely expect less than that. We always have to remember, we always give the MLB pipeline rankings or the Baseball America rankings.
Right, right.
Just because some third-party publication is going to rank a guy as the team's best prospect, that doesn't mean internally that that's the view that's the guy they view as their best prospect.
Yeah, or the other team's view, yeah.
Right. But this Owen Casey kid, according to MLB Pipeline, not only is he a top 50 prospect in baseball, he is considered the number one prospect in the entire Cubs organization. So they just, a guy who is probably going to be a pretty big part of the future for the Cubs, they move on from him in order to go get Cabrera. That's a good get for the Cubs. It's not great for the Cardinals, not great for the NL Central. But I thought the fact that he was the headliner in there and he's essentially the best prospect that the Cubs have, I thought that was very notable.
Yeah, and for those that aren't aware of prospects, what he's reputed to be is a power guy. He's a power-hitting corner outfielder who will strike out, who's not going to hit 300, but he's a guy that has 30 homer power. That's the view of him.
The guy that they got...
Cabrera?
Cabrera.
Oh, yeah.
The guy you're talking
about. Owen Casey, yeah.
Would Owen Casey be at a similar level as Brendan Donovan? What I'm trying to get at is, on behalf of all my Cardinals fans out there who don't know as much as you guys do, Why would it be better to have that guy as opposed to a Brendan Donovan if they offered us that trade? Why wouldn't we just keep a guy that we have 2 years of control over and we're comfortable with and he's a fan favorite?
If you were talking Casey versus yes. Donovan, well, Casey's got 6 years of control. He's only 23 years old, and Donovan's a free agent in 2 years. So even that by itself would be a pretty good argument, but they're different players, right? Donovan is contact and on-base skill and versatility, and Owen Casey is a big outfielder who hits homers. So it kind of depends on what you need, but mostly it's the age and the control and the cost.
Okay.
He's a lot cheaper.
And Dave, it's a good question you ask, because it goes back to something that I think we need to continue repeating to fans over and over and over, no matter how sick and tired some may be of hearing it. Chaim Bloom has explicitly said, and this is a paraphrase because I won't get the exact words correctly, but basically I'm saying exactly what Chaim has said, that when they've got two roads in front of them and one road leads to short-term gains and one road leads to long-term, they are always going to take the road right now that goes long-term. So if we were to specifically compare Casey to Donovan, Casey is the much better long-term player. I think he's going to be the better player overall, too, just because of the power that Kevin mentioned. But even if you throw that out for a second, the Cardinals are in a mode right now where their number one goal in these moves that they're making is to go get controllable players that they're going to have in the organization for a very long time.
How do you guys anticipate this year's spring training being different from past Mosaic spring trainings? If at all.
I don't think optically it's going to look that different. I would say the way they evaluate players might look a little bit different but honestly, that evaluation is leading to who they're bringing in the first place. So I don't know, Kevin, you're probably going to have a better answer on this than me, but I don't, you know, for somebody who makes a trip down to Jupiter and they like being there before Grapefruit League games start and they get to sit back on the backfields and then catch, like, I don't think anything's going to really look that optically different.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know because I haven't seen it, but the facilities are going to be different.
That's true.
So there may be more activity in certain places that there wasn't before, but like you said, Matt, I'm not sure it would be super noticeable to the naked eye unless you're, you know, like we would be there asking questions about what's going on where. I think you'll still see the same stuff. If you're out there on the backfields, it'll look the same to you, I would imagine, because it'll be, you know, pitcher's fielding practice, PFPs, batting practice, catcher drills, you know, outfielders doing various drills, bunting drills. That stuff probably won't change very much.
So people are going to hear this conversation tomorrow night when we do the countdown show with myself and Mike Claiborne. But something that he and I actually talked about today is, I think this year there's going to be even more value to the data that is recorded on the backfields, like specifically to a Justin Brule, who they just signed or who they just acquired yesterday. What, he's going to pitch in 5, 6, 7 Grapefruit League games, in all likelihood will pitch one inning. Like, that's a really small sample size, and not that you don't use that to evaluate him, but there's on the backfields, everything is being quantified. There's computers, there's cameras, like nothing happens back there that you don't have computer readings on. I think specifically for a guy like Brule and other players who you don't really know that well, some of the stuff that they do behind the scenes is going to be even more important than what happens in Grapefruit League play. Like for Brule, what does it look like when he pitches one day and then the next day he's back on the backfield? So the fact that there's going to be so many new guys around, I think that's going to be different in spring training, because there's not going to be that comfort level on who they are. So they're going to have to use a little bit more of a fine-tooth comb to evaluate these players.
So if Jordan Walker kills it in spring training, is there still a decent chance that Chaim and Ollie would say, we're not falling for that again? We're going to keep you in AAA for a while. Show us how you do the first couple of months. Or can you see a path for him being the starting right fielder again this year?
I think he has to play himself out of a job in spring training. I think he's penciled in right now.
Oh, interesting.
That doesn't guarantee anything. If he has a terrible spring, he could end up at AAA. But your scenario, Dave, I don't I don't see that playing out. I think if he has a good spring training, that's going to be good enough for him to have a job.
Yeah, I would. Matt, you put it well. Like, he's going to have to play his way out. First, and for two reasons. One, if he's doing things reasonably well in the spring, then there's really no point of putting him at Memphis, because the challenge he has is to be able to do it at the major league level. But they don't have anyone else to play outfield. So your outfielders right now are Lars Nootbaar, Victor Scott II, Jordan Walker, and Nathan Church.
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably play Sejacy in the outfield. Like, maybe that's a thing. But that was my computer, sorry. And Burleson could obviously slide out there, and you'd have to put someone else at first base. But you don't have a lot, and you don't have any right-handed bats. Burleson, Nootbaar, and that's assuming Nootbaar's even healthy at the beginning of the year. But Burleson, Nootbaar, Scott, Church, all left-handed hitters. So he would have to screw up pretty badly to not be the opening day right fielder.
Is Victor Scott in a similar position?
I think so, wouldn't you say, Matt? Because at least in his case, you know you're getting the base-running element and you're getting an elite defender.
Yeah, I think he's given a lot of leash, and he's got to take a step. Yeah, you know, he's just somebody who needs to make contact a little bit more often, and his speed is going to get him on base. He's ripe for a step forward, and he doesn't have to take that much of a step forward offensively for all of a sudden a lot of stuff to start going in his direction.
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice with what I'm going to say, not to you, but about him, because he's a young player. But he doesn't hit the ball hard at all. And that's fine to a degree. But the problem that I'm running into with what I look at is he's got a couple of profile things that you like. So he drew a bunch of walks. Like, he walked well above average, which is not easy to do when nobody wants to walk the fastest guy in the league, right?
So he's not hitting.
Right, and he's not hitting. So why in the world would you want to walk him? That speaks to his skill. That speaks to his ability to lay off of pitches. He doesn't chase. So if you look at a thing called chase rate, which is basically just how many times you swing at pitches outside the zone, he's in the top 20-25% of the league. Those are great characteristics. But he still has a high swing and miss rate and a high strikeout rate, which means he's missing strikes. He just has to put the ball in play in the zone more frequently. You cannot be a swing and miss guy in the zone on a regular basis and be a quality hitter. You just can't do it.
What would you need to see from him at the plate to justify him being our long-term center fielder?
League average, would you say, Matt?
Yeah.
Something around league average?
Yeah. Once he is so impactful once he gets on the bases, he needs less time to do more on the bases, if that makes sense. It's he was a terrible hitter last year. Yet I don't.
But
think
it was only it was
far.
Only worse as the season went along, right? The first month and a half, 2 months, he was pretty good.
Well, there was, I'm sure a little bit of a book, and then also a long season, you know, wears on a guy, and it all that. But just making a little bit more contact because of the speed profile that he has. If he's just getting on base a little bit more, he's my guy in center field, and he's my guy at the top of the order, and I feel very good about it.
Yeah, he had a great April for him. Like, it wasn't all-star level, but it was an above-average hitter. I think he was like 10% above league average in April. That would be phenomenal, but he wasn't that in any other month, and every month from June on got worse. So it was like June, July, August, September, all got worse progressively. And again, that it can be a number of things. But he's a guy that this year, if he's making plays defensively, he's going to play, because they're not trying to win the division, right? They're not. They know that's a rebuild. He's going to get to play, because he does guarantee you two high-end impact skills with base running and defense. So he's a little different than Walker. If Walker gives you average defense, you can live with a little bit more of the offensive struggle, but that's a big if.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
You bet.
I was raised here in this living hell.
So I've always said that in the band, I'm less of a singer and more of a mimic. Like, I've always had the ability to mimic voices. I can't mimic this one.
You can't do Michael McDonald?
I've tried for about 3 weeks, because we're going to play this in the new Dave Glover band. And for about 3 weeks on the way home, I just played it on repeat and saying, and I can hit all the notes, but he's just got, I mean, he's Michael McDonald, right?
Well, he's got a sound that you don't really hear from anyone else.
Yeah.
You hear it immediately and you're like, that's Michael McDonald.
Yeah. So great. I've never been a anti-Doobie Brothers guy, but I would say that's one of the top 10 bands in the last 10 years I've really gone back and embraced.
I've never gotten into it, but...
They're just such great musicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many Doobie Brothers are there?
All of
them. Like 97?
Yeah, there's probably 8. It's a big band.
Yeah, it is. They got a lot going on.
Rach, what do you got?
Let's do a couple of headlines, which are brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. We have what I hope is some good news from the Trump administration. The president is saying the U.S. will ban large institutional investors from buying single-family homes. This is in a bid to reduce home prices. And this was revealed in a post on Truth Social. He's going to be asking Congress to codify the measure and is going to be discussing additional housing and affordability proposals soon. In his statement, he said, people live in homes, not corporations.
Yeah, I like
See,
it.
There's a policy I'll get behind 100%.
Yeah,
I don't care who it is.
Me too.
We do need to make sure that we're not letting hedge funds and massive real estate investment companies buy everything up, and which will inflate prices because they're the ones buying everything. It's not really a competitive marketplace. And then they can just kind of control things, which we don't want.
We only have time for one more story here. I thought this one was interesting, though. Jimmy Kimmel Live is going to be dialing back its musical guests. This is according to multiple sources telling The Hollywood Reporter that now those musical performances will only be featured twice a week. It used to be every night. They're citing, you know, budget cuts are a huge reason for this. You can also see this in NBC's Late Night with Seth Meyers. They've pretty much gotten rid of their musical guests and their house band. It just shows you how much late night has changed. That used to be like one of the main reasons to tune in. And now these shows just don't even have the budget to sustain musical guests anymore.